This is the Breaker.News podcast for the week of August 23rd, 2020. I'm Bob Mackin, publisher of the Breaker.News and host of the Breaker.News podcast. Welcome to edition number 148. The Breaker is your source for news, opinion, and analysis about British Columbia issues, institutions, and influencers. Later, I'll tell you how you can support the Breaker. On this edition, the Is It Just Me commentary, headlines from the Pacific Rim and Pacific Northwest, the big deal feature, The View from Bowen Island. I catch up with Jim Mullen, the president of Football Canada, to talk about island life and last week's cancellation of the 2020 Canadian Football League season. Where to next for three down football? And I'll award a virtual Nanaimo bar to those making a difference. Now, is it just me? Is it just me, or does the passing of Canadian media legend Alan Fotheringham sting even more in 2020, which is a year so hideous that they named it twice? The editor-in-chief of the Heaven Herald put a 30 on the colorful life of the satirical sage from Saskatchewan and Sardis. Fotheringham was 11 days shy of his 88th birthday. The mainstay in the Vancouver Sun and Maclean's magazine was the man who called Vancouver Lotusland. He called the Liberal Party the natural governing party, and he called Canada the decaffeinated United States. Fotheringham chronicled the first and second Premiers Bennett of BC and Trudeau the first. I grew up delighted to read Fotheringham in the news section and Jim Taylor in the sports section every day. As a kid, I got to deliver their words to my neighbors' doorsteps. As an adult, I got to meet them. It's as if we're living in a Fotheringham column right now. First, can you believe it? It's hockey night in Canada in August. And the biggest scandal of the year? It's a bungled charity donation to the Killburgers. Trudeau II and his sycophants insisted it was a nothing burger. But then the finance minister quit. So the bill is due. No more. Now Canadians want free money from Freeland. Christia almighty. The Democrats in the U.S. have their eyes set on evicting Donald Trump from the White House. So they held a convention that was equal parts infomercial and telethon to promote Joe Biden. The big story was that Biden didn't make a mistake. Some folks on both sides of the border are protesting against the government because they don't trust the government, but they won't wear masks during the pandemic, even though wearing masks would actually help them hide their faces from the government. Meanwhile, Vancouver's Parks Board has done everything this summer in its power to open up parks to camping and drinking. Seattle had Chaz, remember, the Capitol Hill Autonomous Zone. Vancouver has the Strathcona Park Autonomous Zone. You guessed it, Spaz! Tip of my hat to Alan Fotheringham for so many years of putting ink on my fingers and his words in my head.
Now it's time on the Breaker.News podcast for Around the Rim. We look at news headlines around the Pacific Rim.
In Apple Daily, chicken butts in the crosshairs as China takes Xi order on food waste to extremes. A recent order issued by Chinese President Xi Jinping to cut food waste has sparked new extreme measures as the domestic food sector scrambles to show support for his call. The eagerness to fall in line was evident at Shengtang State Guest Hotel in Henan Province, where an inspector newly installed to curb food waste found on his first day at work that chefs were throwing away too many chicken butts, a favorite dish of the Chinese people. Hiroshi Ikazawa in the Japan Times: Japan's football leagues seek new normal for tackling coronavirus infection. While the Big Ten and Pac-12, two of college football's major conferences in the U.S., have canceled their fall seasons due to the COVID-19 pandemic, the X-League, Japan's top football league, is scheduled to start its shortened season October 24th. Japan's Football Association is leaving the decision regarding helmet shields to individual leagues. The Kanto College League is discussing if wearing a shield should be mandatory, while the Kansai League has asked schools to wear the face shield but is still on the lookout for a better solution for preventing droplet infection. Inkang Chung in the South China Morning Post: hundreds arrested, some with triad ties, in series of raids on brothels, gambling dens, and illicit petrol sellers in Hong Kong's new territories. A total of 325 people, including 11 suspected Triad Society members, were rounded up in a multi-department crackdown targeting the gang-controlled drug, sex, and illicit fuel trades. The Joint Police, Customs, and Fire Services operation also led to the seizure of more than 4,000 liters of untaxed petrol in one illicit fueling site in Yuen Long, the largest bust of its kind in more than a decade. Officers raided 22 brothels, gambling dens, illegal bars, and illicit fueling stations between August 11th and 19th. That's Around the Rim on this edition of the Breaker.News podcast.
Now it's time on the Breaker.News podcast for Cascadia Calling. We look at news headlines around the Pacific Northwest.
Maxine Bernstein in the Oregonian. Judge allows journalists, legal observers to remain exempt from Portland protest dispersal orders. A judge granted a preliminary injunction against federal officers that will continue to exempt journalists and legal observers from orders to disperse after the officers declare riots at Portland protests. The order bars federal officers from assaulting or threatening to use force against the press or the legal monitors. U.S. District Judge Michael Simon found journalists and legal observers have a right to document whether the government's closing of public streets amid riot declarations are lawfully done. He also found that federal officers' use of force against members of the media and legal observers during protests has not been inadvertent. Michael Rietmulder in the Seattle Times. 35 music venues receive King County coronavirus relief grants. King County announced that the recipients of $750,000 in grants will help soften some of the blow to shuttered music halls. The majority of the 35 music venues were awarded $19,500 grants, with a handful landing $40,000 and others $10,000. Venues awarded the highest $40,000 tier include Downtown Staples Jazz Alley and the Triple Door, the Crocodile, El Corazon, Wallingford Funk Den, Sea Monster Lounge, the Century Ballroom, and Central District Restaurant and Nightclub Red Lounge. The $19,500 award for Ballard's Tractor Tavern is only enough to cover 1 month of expenses. Dan Marshall in Nanaimo News Now. Nanaimo Sports and Social Club incorporates social distancing for yard games. Socially distanced games of bocce, can jam, ladder ball, beersby, and mulky are being played by a crowd of about 40. Normally, the NSSC would be offering adult summer sessions for sports like kickball and dodgeball, which garner over 300 participants each. 2020 was supposed to be a year for the addition of beach and grass volleyball to the list of NSSC programs, but that is very unlikely now. A dodgeball season for the fall is still a slim possibility. And these headlines this week in the Breaker.News. Woke SkyTrain cleanses emergency lingo after staff complaint. NDP sends mixed signals about Richmond Gym. Government wants accused money launderers building after licensing Sun's security company. Plus, Solicitor General Mike Farnworth gets tough, promises $2,000 fines for those that host gatherings and events of more than 50 people, and $200 fines for those that attend such events during the pandemic. Farnworth, you'll remember, also promised $2,000 fines back in April for those caught price gouging for toilet paper, hand sanitizer, masks, and other things. After 4 months, not a single $2,000 ticket has been issued by the province for price gouging.
Back in April, you had a similar get-tough announcement on the issue of price gouging with fines up to $2,000 for that. And there were thousands of complaints to Consumer Protection BC and voluminous evidence. But I checked yesterday and still there's no provincial violation ticket for anyone regarding price gouging. Why will this be different? Why should the public have any faith that you're actually going to get tough and there will actually be fines?
Well, the fact of the matter is that the fines are in place. And at the very beginning of the pandemic, in relation to price gouging, we made it clear because there were examples of some price gouging taking place. In those cases, material was confiscated. We put out what the penalties were going to be. And it isn't just about levying a fine, but rather it's sending a message that government takes this seriously. And the reality is, since then, the issue has, you know, people have gotten the message. All of those cases are investigated by Consumer Protection BC. In this particular situation, again, we are seeing a small minority of people who are, either willfully ignorant and deciding that they don't have to follow the rules. We're letting them know that yes, they do, and that there will be financial penalties. And I fully expect that people will take this into that they will be enforced, and that that's why it's being done.
Read the stories behind the headlines. Go to thebreaker.news. This is the Big Deal feature on the Breaker.news podcast.
The view from Bowen Island, a short ferry ride from West Vancouver in Howe Sound. It's an island of 20 square miles that is home of 3,700 people. Last time we had a view from Bowen Island was back in April. The province was in shutdown mode. Now it's in staycation mode. People are encouraged to travel around but stay socially distanced and wear a mask. I'm joined by one of those Bowen Islanders, Jim Mullen. He's a veteran broadcaster. He's the president of Football Canada and host of Crown Gridiron Nation on TSN, the sports network. First, the big news this week in Canadian sport and Canadian culture. There will be no Grey Cup awarded for the first time since 1919. The on-again, off-again season was going to be abbreviated and held in Winnipeg. But first, the league needed a $30 million loan, which never arrived. Jim, what went wrong?
Well, I can tell you that on the Friday that they found out, I was talking to a senior official with the Canadian Football League that afternoon, about 1:30 Eastern time. And at that point, they were very confident that they were going to play football. In fact, I was having my Football Canada call with them at that time because they were in fear that we wouldn't be talking for the next few weeks because everybody would be jetting off to Winnipeg to start the CFL season up, abbreviated as it was. I would assume that within an hour to about 90 minutes after that call, they found out. And from all reports that I hear, they were flabbergasted in the CFL office that financial support from the government, at least in the form that they wanted it, to the tune of about $30 million, wasn't coming through. I think the impact on the league itself is yet to be determined. I think the game right now, and I'm speaking as president of Football Canada, needs to take a serious inventory of where we're at. We have an opportunity with the time in front of us now to actually bring parts of the game together. I've been joking with a couple of people when you take a look at the four national entities that are responsible for football in this country, the Canadian Football League, who is not operating and is taking a look at their business model and probably downsizing as they try to recover, U Sports, who just had a major controversy with age limits and canceling their season everywhere except Quebec, and struggling with all kinds of problems behind the scenes. The CJFL, who shut things down about 2 weeks ago, and us, and we have kids playing football and adults playing football all over the country to one form or another. We're engaged in the sport. Out of those four groups, Football Canada is the strongest out of those four groups right now. And I think that that in the past, prior to the announcement coming out officially on Monday, you could never say that. And I'm not sure what that says about the strength of the game in the country right now. We're looking at ways to bring the CFL, U Sports, CJFL, and other people involved with the game to the table very soon to have a discussion. How that discussion looks is another thing entirely. It may be in the form of a national digital football summit. We're overdue for one of these. It's time that we took a look at all the pieces of the puzzle for the game of football, really put it under the microscope, and truly figure out how we bring all these parts together. Because I think football's biggest weakness in this country is that we just look at the CFL as nine teams, or we just look at the NFL as a TV show, or the university guys just do their own thing. If we can get alignment in this sport from the top to the bottom, we can be a strong entity, because every marketing survey that I've seen done on sports in Canada confirmed that football is the number two sport in this country. And around half picked the CFL as their number one football brand. And of those people who support football, 88% like both the NFL and the CFL from a consumer perspective, We prior to COVID, we had 56,000 members, and we know 120,000 people play the game in this country. You put it together, and we're strong. We stay separate, and we'll fall to pieces. So I think it's incumbent upon the strongest organization out there right now for the game to get everybody sitting around the table and have that discussion.
Wasn't there any other way to make this happen, to rely less on the government and have some of the wealthier owners of the CFL dig in their pockets to make something happen?
I think you practically answered your own question there, quite frankly, Bob. When you take a look at what would have worked out to about $3.5 million per team for a Bob Young in Hamilton, for the OSEG people in Ottawa, for Maple Leaf Sports and Entertainment, for David Braley, for Murray Edwards and the Calgary Flames people, you know, dig deep enough in your couch and you should be able to find $3.5 million to keep things going. And of course, the most profitable organizations in the league are the community-owned franchises. The only one that I'd really worry about in terms of trying to meet an additional payroll without a single fan coming through would be the Montreal Alouettes and their new ownership. Certainly the money was there. I'm not sure if the league fully explored all of their creative solutions to this. It's unfortunate because I think what the CFL may suffer from by not being front and center in front of people, even in a diminished capacity and in a 6-week run, is disruption. like I used to, every day grab a latte down at the Cove. I don't do that anymore. I haven't done that for 6 months. And I think when things finally get back to whatever normal is again, I don't think I'm grabbing that latte anymore. And I think when it comes to consumption patterns for sports fans, this disruption is going to be damaging to the CFL unless there's a real effort to shore up the base. And that's one of the things that I'm talking about in terms of bringing the stakeholders together. Let's shore up the base. Let's make sure the community's strong, the football community from coast to coast, so they can rally. Because it's going to take a few years for this league to rebuild to past numbers. And also, 2021 is anything but guaranteed. When it comes to a potential for spectator sports. And I think there would be a bit of a chill, actually, in terms of going back to stadiums and arenas and facilities. There's a lot of challenges there when I look into the future. But, it's time for the community to pull together, have that discussion and rally.
Yeah, the public health officials are telling us the virus could be around until 2022 and beyond. They're also warning that mass gatherings really can't happen until we have a vaccine or herd immunity. So next summer could be a lot like this summer. I guess the only thing that Randy Ambrosi, the commissioner, now has is time on his side to make a plan for next year, to make those plan A, plan B, plan C. And part of that plan has to be for perhaps a bubble like in Winnipeg, but maybe a little bit longer. Now they have the chance to plot it out many months ahead. But of course, money is going to be the big issue.
Well, money will be the big issue, and they'll have to approach the government again, I would think. One wise sports marketing mind said to me, where were one of the big Canadian banks in all of this? What an opportunity it would have been for a large Canadian bank to step in and say, we got you covered through this. We're a Canadian institution. The CFL is a Canadian institution. We're standing up for Canadians, and we're gonna make that loan available to you. And as a result, right now the CFL doesn't have a banking sponsor. They used to have Scotia Bank until they pulled the plug about 6 years ago and shifted everything over to hockey. There would have been a real opportunity for a bank to come to the CFL's rescue as good Canadians. But you know, that's just one idea out there. Maybe that's an idea that they may want to pursue if the ability to sell tickets at the gate is severely limited as we start pulling out of this COVID thing next summer. You know, certainly there's also the word out there that the government of Canada would like to actually sit down and work with the CFL in terms of finding ways to support their business model. You know, that would mean a deep dive that would take some time. Certainly individuals around the government sent the messages to the CFL that they didn't have the ability to work on the timeline for this year that the CFL needed. So, you know, there may be a government answer in the offing for next year if the CFL does have challenges at the gate.
And last time we had you on the podcast, it was April, and of course it was shutdown time, and you had just recovered from what you believed was coronavirus. Of course, at the time, there was very little testing going on for people who weren't healthcare professionals or people not living in seniors' homes. A lot of people were coming down with illnesses, and you shook one off. 4 months later, how do you feel, and what is life like on Bowen?
Well, I don't know if it was influenza B or the Rona. I do know that that I have some ill effects and lost the hearing in one ear, actually. On Bowen, it's fairly sedate. I think mask wearing is about a 50-50 proposition. Finally, we've got the general store complying to a mask order where everybody is wearing a mask, and the grocers, everybody's wearing a mask there. Actually, general store's been really good. It's the grocery store, the organic grocer, that hasn't been all that good with masks, but they've finally come around. You know, it's nice to have a peace of mind to not be tied into the Lower Mainland directly by land, I guess, right now. You know, from my perspective, from our perspective in our home, we're just laying low and trying to be as safe as possible. And when we go out, there's always a mask on, and we're being as thoughtful as possible to others.
How about the life on Bowen? Has anything returned to pre-pandemic era? And conversely, what about the new normal? I think you mentioned last time that some of the restaurants there were now doing home deliveries. They weren't doing that before.
Well, now they're not doing it again. So there you go. So I guess that's turned back to normal. Oh, and some kids had one heck of a house party last night across the street from us. So I guess that's returning to normal. You know, when it was sunny, as opposed to being socked in the way we are right now, the boating traffic, pleasure boaters, that was all back. You know, lots of people out there hiking, you know, lots of commerce in the cove. You know, it's good that people have been able to wedge in a bit of a summer, because I think we're going to have some challenges this winter. As we dive into this, whether we're on Bowen Island, whether we're up in Lillooet, whether we're in North Vancouver, it doesn't matter. I think that it's good getting as much as we can in the summer, because I think winter, no matter where we are, is going to have some challenges.
Before we go, if you were programming TSN, and if you could choose three CFL games, which three would you choose to program on TSN?
The 1994 Western semifinal, Western final rather, between the Calgary Stampeders and the BC Lions, that ended in the second half in the snow with Danny McManus connecting with Darren Flutie to send the BC Lions to the Grey Cup against Baltimore. Where the one brother Darren managed to beat his more famous brother Doug The 1989 Grey Cup between the Saskatchewan Rough Riders and the Hamilton Tiger Cats from what was then Sky Dome. Probably the best offensive game ever played in the CFL. And actually, the signature play in that wasn't from the winning team, the Saskatchewan Rough Riders. It was from the Hamilton Tiger Cats, Tony Champion, changing his direction in midair to catch a touchdown pass with two broken ribs at the time. Of course, won by Dave Ridgway's field goal. Now, when I get to the third one, there's a lot to choose from. There was a season opener from a few years back between Saskatchewan and Montreal in 2010 that may have been the best season opener of any league anywhere. It was just an outstanding piece of entertainment. But if I could restore the video and colorize it, my choice would be the 1958 Grey Cup between the Winnipeg Blue Bombers, led by Jim Van Pelt and Kenny Plain, with Leo Lewis in the backfield, against the Hamilton Tiger Cats, and Hal Patterson and Bernie Filoni. Jim Coleman, he's long since left us, but he covered 40 Grey Cups, I think, in his time. He swears that was the best Grey Cup game ever played. And when I finally did have an opportunity to catch the three or four camera black and white kinescope spectacular they had on the CBC one time, I saw why. Some of the athletic prowess from that era was you throw those athletes into any league at any time these days and they would have been outstanding. So it would be the 1958 Grey Cup would probably be my third one, but I'd really like to get a nice color copy of it, and those unfortunately don't exist.
Well, thanks again to Jim Mullen for joining us on the Breaker.News podcast, giving us the view from Bowen Island. Jim is host of Crown Gridiron Nation on TSN and president of Football Canada. When your face is gone, you won't stand alone. We'll all stand together, because this is our home. And it don't matter what color you are, because love will conquer hate. So you won't stand alone. You won't stand alone. The virtual Nanaimo Bar, brought to you by Spruce Hill Contracting.
Every week, we end the Breaker.News podcast on a tasty note by awarding the goodness of a virtual Nanaimo Bar to a person or group that is making a difference. A virtual version of the province's favorite dessert bar goes this week to the Pacific National Exhibition. Despite the pandemic, the PNE Fair is on in drive-through fashion. Mini Donuts, Super Dogs, and the Prize Home Lottery. Vancouver's end-of-summer tradition is on. It's $25 per carload. Go to pne.ca for information. Here is PNE Fair spokeswoman Laura Balance.
We wanted to continue to push hard to be able to do something in a way that was safe and yet allowed people to come together and celebrate. We take very seriously our role in the history of this city and this province as being the place where British Columbia comes together following adversity. And so just like after the Great Depression, just like after World War I and World War II, where British Columbia came to this site to wrap its arms around each other, in this COVID year, it's from a distance, it's figuratively, but we want British Columbia to know we're here, we are fighting on for the many, many jobs that we represent here, for the economic impact we represent to this province, and also for the collective history that we represent. The PNE is the place where Michael Bublé was discovered, where the Beatles played, where the Super Dogs became the Super Dogs. We have so many important milestones that have happened on this site. We are the place where people came with their grandparents, and today they come with their grandchildren. And of course, we have that iconic wooden roller coaster. Summer, in my opinion, wouldn't be the same in British Columbia without the end of summer tradition that is the fair. And so we are doing everything we can during this incredibly difficult time. Our fair has not been able to, and our corporation, our organization has not been able to receive any of the federal programs in response to COVID because of how we are classified. And it's very unfortunate. We're the only entity of our kind in the country that hasn't been able to qualify for those programs. And so we're fighting on to try and be able to continue forward past 2020 when the province comes back and we're ready to celebrate in person and not from a distance in future.
You can nominate someone for a virtual Nanaimo bar. Send me an email to bob@thebreaker.news. Spruce Hill Contracting, custom homes and renovations. Find more information at sprucehill.ca. That's it for the Breaker.News podcast for the week of August 23rd, 2020. I'm Bob Mack, and thanks for joining me. Did you know that on August 23rd in 1991, the World Wide Web opened to the public? It's sometimes known as Internet Day. Now you know. Send me your feedback, send me your story ideas to bob@thebreaker.news. Bookmark thebreaker.news. You can also find us at thebreaker.ca. Sign up for the email newsletter and get updates to your inbox. For news as it happens, follow The Breaker News on Twitter and visit thebreaker.news on Facebook. You can support The Breaker for as little as $2 a month. For more information, go to patreon.com/thebreakernews. That's P-A-T-R-E-O-N.com/thebreakernews. Until next week.